Well, you know, I have to recognize, I'm excited, and it's exciting to be back up here again, to join together, to listen to and get to know our good and our loving God. Now, this morning, we're continuing on in the parables of Jesus, where we're listening to Jesus himself as he shares stories and illustrations meant to cause us to pause and consider what it is that Jesus is saying. Now, I confess, even as I was preparing for this morning to get up here and share, as I was soaking in Jesus' words in Luke 6, which is where we're going to be this morning, I was actually a little surprised at what I found. And it's my hope this morning that we'll all be surprised and encouraged, not by my words, but by Jesus' words as we listen to him this morning. So, as we jump in, I'd like us to pause and just consider for a moment a what-if situation. Now imagine for a moment the parents. One day, your teen son or daughter comes home, and you can tell by the way that they carry themselves, and they're talking with you, that something big and bad has happened to them. You know, that parent radar that you have, it's going off, and everything is telling you that they're clearly crushed by something. Now, if you aren't a parent of a teen, please adjust this picture just a little bit. So grandparents, maybe imagine this is one of your grown kids. Or teens, maybe this is one of your friends. And you're in this conversation, and you're like, you're a little hesitant, but you ask it anyway. You're like, what's wrong? And you discover that the most treasured part of this person's life just blew up. It, you know, for your teen son or daughter, maybe it looks like this. It might be that sport that they worked at for years, honing their skills, perfecting their abilities to get that perfect spot on the team. You know, they ate, they slept, they breathed the sport, only to try out and to discover not only did they not get the spot, they didn't even make the team. Or teens. Maybe it's a friend's dating relationship that just blew up. You know, that relationship with that perfect guy or girl that they had hoped would like them all along, and suddenly they did. But now, after dating a while, suddenly the other person, they just broke up with them out of the blue. Or maybe grandparents, it's your adult kids, that their family is just starting to fall apart. Whatever it is, that most treasured part of their life just blew up, and they're at a loss as to what to say and do. And in that moment, they turn to you, and in desperation and in an honest desire for help, they ask you this: what do I do? What do I do? How would you respond? See, let me put a picture up on the screen here. The person you're talking with, their life probably feels a little bit like that house up there right now. It's literally falling apart at the seams. And so, you know, I'm no builder, but I do know that when a house starts to look like this, the repair that's going to need to happen, it's going to start with what's happening underneath the home, even before you address what's happening on the building itself. In other words, there's a foundation issue. What the other person has been trusting, as we look at somebody's life, trusting as a foundation of their life, what gives them meaning and purpose, what gives them significance, what gives them comfort, it's no longer supporting that weight. And as a result, everything about their life starts to come undone. Yet, what if your friend's life, or even your own life, were to be hit with major challenges? Whether that's a loss of relationships, a job, a dream for your life or your family. And instead of falling apart on the inside where people can't see it, as well as perhaps on the outside, there's a hope and a reality that brought you through the hard times with a safety and security that at times is beyond understanding. Because here's the reality, and here's the next slide. Our lives don't have to come to this. And you have to ask why. It's because God is in the business of changing lives. And the parable that we're going to look at this morning is all about dealing with foundation issues. Now, here's a key question for us as we're going to look at this morning. What would it mean for us to examine the foundations of our lives? Or maybe we actually have to start back a step. Are we willing to examine the foundations of our lives? Now, with that question in mind, let's jump into Luke 6. So the main part of our text this morning is going to be found in Luke 6, 46 through 49. Now, however, I have to recognize there's something unique and unexpected that makes a big difference in how we understand what we're about to read. So we actually have to back up a little bit further into Luke 6, 39. Now, to be honest, I was really surprised as I was reading the full chapter of Luke 6 in order to discover what was happening in our text this morning. See, in Luke 6, just to give you a little bit of background, Jesus is speaking to a great crowd on a plain near the Sea of Galilee. And he's giving a whole bunch of sayings about how, as his followers, we're to live in relationship with each other. And then we come to Luke 6, 39, and Jesus transitions from sayings into an illustration. And here's what he says. Here's what Luke 6, 39 says. He also told them a parable. Now, I saw this, and I kept reading, and here was the surprise. As I read on, I read what looked like three different parables from Luke, from verses 39 through 49. After all, the subject matter seems to change each time. So I'm pondering this, and I'm like, okay, what does this mean? And I kind of came to this conclusion. Either it means that the writer who's talking about this is really bad at math, because there's three things there, not one, or maybe I've been missing something. So I went back to the original languages to see what's really being said here. Maybe I'm just missing something. And you know what I found? Here's what it says. Jesus told them a parable. One. And so what's more, where our English Bibles tend to put in breaks like, you know, a tree and its fruit, or build your house on a rock in verses 43 and 46, it's easy to miss that at the beginning of each of these sections, there are conjunctions like for in verse 43, and in the original languages, an and at the start of verse 46. So these are verbal cues there that are meant to remind us that these sections work with each other in order to understand what it is that Jesus is saying. Now, here's the question you might be asking, and I hope you're asking it, like, yeah, so what? Like, that's pretty technical. So what does that have to do with anything? Why are we talking about this? Because these illustrations are meant to be read together. As we do so, it helps us understand the tone and the focus of what Jesus says when we get into our passage this morning. And so, while we're not going to walk through each of these sections, we're not going to walk through Luke 6, 39 through 49 in great detail, I do want to give us a quick snapshot of what's going on in each of the sections. And I also have to recognize, if you're like me, for those of us who've read these as separate from one another, as I so often have, it's going to stretch us a little bit. And because of this, I would encourage you to go back this week and read Luke 6, 39 through 49 as one big parable with three sections. And let Jesus speak to you directly and soak in what he's saying. Okay. So I'm going to start reading in verse 39, and I'm going to try to point out some connections quickly as we get to the main section that we're going to be focusing on this morning. So here's what Jesus is saying, starting in verse 39. He also told them a parable. Can a blind man lead a blind man? Will they not both fall into a pit? A disciple is not above his teacher, but everyone, when he is fully trained, will be like his teacher. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but not notice the log in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, brother, let me take out the speck that is in your eye, when you yourself do not see the log that is in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take out the log in your own eye, and then you will be able to see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. Now, in section 1, 39 through 42, it can be summarized a little bit like this. Can a blind man lead a blind man? See, it points out our inability to see what's really going on, and so we need to help each other. But in order to help a brother with what's going on in their life, we first need to recognize and deal with our own deeper issues first. But Jesus keeps going, and he says this, for, that is a verbal link right there, for no good tree bears good fruit, nor again does a bad tree bear good fruit, for each tree is known by its own fruit. For figs are not gathered from thorn bushes, nor are grapes picked from a bramble bush. A good person out of the good treasure of his heart produces good, and the evil person out of the evil treasure produces evil. For out of the abundance of the heart, his mouth speaks. In section 2, verses 43 through 45, Jesus shifts the picture just a little bit to trees which produce fruit in alignment with what kind of tree they are. In other words, you do what's natural and normal to who you are. Now, with that in mind, let's keep going and hear what Jesus is saying. But I'm going to repeat that verse and keep reading. It says this, Luke 6:45. The good person out of the good treasure of his heart produces good, and the evil person out of the evil treasure produces evil. For out of the abundance of the heart, his mouth speaks. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do what I tell you? For everyone who comes to me and hears my word and does them, I will show you what he is like. He is like a man building a house who dug deep and laid the foundation on the rock. And when a flood arose, the stream broke against that house and could not shake it because it had been well built. But the one who hears and does not do them is like a man who built a house on the ground without a foundation. When the stream broke against it, immediately it fell, and the ruin of the house was great. So Jesus shifts the illustration just a little bit again in this third section. And once again, he actually starts with a question. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do what I tell you? Now, for those of us, you know, for those who would have been sitting there listening to Jesus, and for us as well, he actually gives them a question which was meant to give us a moment to pause and genuinely do a heart check. See, Jesus is not putting the emphasis on what they are or are not doing, namely doing what God tells them, but he is instead putting the emphasis on why are they doing what they're doing. Now, here's what I hope you're asking. Where in the world do I get this in what we're reading? Here's the answer. See, up on the screen we have this picture. Jesus saying, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do what I tell you? Here's the answer. It's in what Jesus said in verse 45 just before this. The good person out of the good treasure of his heart produces good. The evil person out of the evil treasure produces evil. For out of the abundance of the heart, his mouth speaks. See, Jesus is asking us to look at the fruit produced in our lives and consider what is happening at the roots. Or to give it a slightly different twist, and here's another slide for this, Jesus is identifying that the fruit of our lives function as either an encouragement or a warning sign to what's happening with a tree. Or, in this case, it might be a little bit like this, a lot like cracks appearing in unexpected places as a warning sign of what's happening at the foundation of the building. See, we can see them, we can notice them, other people can even point them out to us, which is the point of the first parable. But the solution isn't simply in fixing the cracks that appear. The cracks themselves, while being issues, are simply symptoms of a greater and deeper issue. So this is a lot like the log and the speck that Jesus mentioned earlier in the passage, which is also a symptom of a deeper issue. And so in this section, the deeper issue is related to what have we built our lives on? Now, here's a key truth that we're being asked to recognize by Jesus and wrestle with this morning. Who or what we treasure is what we build our lives on. Who or what we treasure is what we build our lives on. So we got to ask the question, what is it that we treasure and what does it produce in our lives? And this is where Jesus is taking us this morning. But again, even before giving us the final part of the illustration, Jesus preps the crowd and us with the question, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do what I tell you? In other words, if we're going to hear what Jesus is about to reveal, we first have to be willing to answer this next question with a yes. And here it is. Are you willing to examine the foundations of your life? Now, with that question hanging in the air, Jesus paints a word picture that describes the outcome of two very different kinds of lives using the image of two different home builders. And in this picture, we encounter builders, foundations, houses, and a river that's currently overflowing its banks. So let's do a little bit of comparison here. Let's compare these two men, their homes, and the big differences that we see. And since we've already read verses 48 and 49, let's just jump into looking at the differences and similarity between them. And these are going to be up on the screen as well. Here's what we see. Both of them built houses. Both of them built houses. Maybe the slide's not working. Okay. Might be a transfer thing. We'll figure it out. Okay. Both of them built houses. Here's another one. One dug deep to find a good foundation, and one didn't. One has a foundation on rock, the other's is just sitting on top of the ground. Similarity here. Both houses are sitting by a stream. Hey, they're both lakefront property, like, right? This is awesome. Lakefront property, cool. And then both houses get hit by flooding from the river. Okay, not so good. The end result, one house isn't shaken, and the other, it fell immediately and was destroyed. Now remember, Jesus says in verse 47 that he is using this picture as an illustration of someone who comes to him, hears his words, and does them. It's a picture of what they're like. So Jesus is using this illustration as a description of our lives. Now, as we were to look back at the parable, it's pretty easy to identify that the builders are meant to picture different kinds of people who respond to Jesus. Jesus uses that same picture and that same illustration. But what about the house? Where does the house fit in it? What is it? See, once the builders have done their building, the focus shifts from the builder to the building, the home. And in this picture, Jesus seems to use the home or the building to represent the very life of the builder. And, you know, it's much in the same way as to how and where we build our homes, what we put in them, why we put those things in our home. They represent us. and our individual family and our individual life. And then once we've done building them, we move into them for shelter and for security and for comfort. And it appears as though Jesus is using the building to represent our lives in a very similar fashion. So here, the home is the very life that we live and all that it entails, which means that in a sense, both the builder of the house as well as the house itself represent us. But what about the foundation? What is the foundation and how do we know? Jesus' answer seems to be this. It's what you hold on to, what you treasure above everything else, and that you look to when your life looks and feels like you're being hit by a flood and are about to be swept away. See, Jesus is offering two different pictures to us with these builders. One who found a good foundation and one who hasn't. Or to go back to the phrase that set the whole thing up, again, the first builder is the one who is the good person out of the good treasure of his heart produces good. He's the one who comes to Jesus and hears his words, and as he responds back to Jesus' love, is changed by him, and he lives out Jesus' words. The second picture, they don't respond, and it's revealed in their actions. So again, reminder, who or what we treasure is what we build our lives on. Now, I just want to pause here for a moment. And like the first builder that Jesus uses in his illustration, I want to dig a little deeper and consider some of the things that we treasure in life. So let me list a few. Some might resonate, some might not. But here's some things that we treasure. Having a perfect family. Or having a perfect marriage. Living a good and comfortable life. Being in a position of authority and influence. Being a good person. Living a good moral life. Living a life that is lived for Jesus by doing all that he asks. Now, here's the question, right? Are any of these things wrong? No, they're not. And I think it would be hard for us to say that in and of themselves, these things are wrong. However, what happens when these become the most treasured parts of our lives? In other words, what happens when we look to them for security, for significance, for meaning and purpose? So, and here's the question we need to wrestle with. What happens when we build our lives on, and you fill in the blank, as the foundation that defines us? Because we all have things that want to fill in that blank. And we have to recognize that it's often hard to recognize what's really at the foundation of our lives on our own. In fact, again, going back to that first parable, the log and the speck, we need other people to help us see that. And it's not to say we never deal with our own issues. We have to deal with our own issues. It's quite the opposite. But what it is saying is, when we need to go to somebody else, we need to first deal with what's happening below the surface. But the reality for us is, and I have to recognize even for myself, we don't like looking below the surface, do we? See, if somebody comes up to us and points out the cracks in our walls where things just aren't quite right, how do we naturally respond? We probably respond a little bit like we do with our physical homes. We bust out the plaster or the cement and we do our best to seal up the cracks that are starting to show. So we make adjustments to our lives and our schedules. We work harder and we try to make the issues go away. But here's the reality. That might fix outward issues temporarily. But what if the issue is really a deeper issue? What if it isn't just a crack here or there, but a symptom of the foundation? It's a foundation issue. And one of the things when we begin to realize that, we might have a different response. when people see cracks in our walls, we just stop inviting people into our life. Because if they're not in there, they won't see the cracks and we won't have to deal with them. Yet we need to look at foundation issues because we might be building our lives on the wrong foundations. And we need others to lovingly help us examine our foundations, even if it hurts in the moment. But again, here's where it gets hard, right? All the foundations we looked at are good things. Having a perfect marriage, being a good person, and especially living for Jesus, living a life aimed at for Jesus. But are these necessarily the full picture, the right foundation? See, Jesus offers a slight twist. Both homes get hit by disaster. One is destroyed, and the other is still standing. And it's because of the foundation. So what does this mean for us? What happens in our lives when the waters of life, all the stresses, all the pressures, all the assumptions, even accusations, you name it, they burst the banks and they come bearing down on us? See, what happens when the hard stuff of life comes along and pushes against our lives, stripping us down to and potentially even stripping us to the very core of our life, the foundations? Will our life fall apart? Will we feel like we're being washed away with the flood? And if we are, what do we do with the ruin and the devastation that it feels like our life has become? Or, having experienced all those pressures bursting against us, will we have hope? Will we have hope? Will we be standing even when it doesn't seem to make sense? What will we be found holding on to? Will our answer be, I did all the right things. I worked really hard to raise a good family. I worked hard on our marriage. I went to church, I prayed, I read my Bible, I lived my life for Jesus. And again, remember, those are all good things. Don't mishear me on that. But are these quality foundations to build our lives on? Or maybe let me ask it another way. What is one word that each of those questions have in common? I. Subtly, somewhere along the lines, we have become our own foundation. And if we had time this morning, it would be worth jumping into and reading the book of Job. See, if we were to turn there and read even the early chapters, we would see this. Job's life was hit by disaster after disaster. He literally lost everything. He lost wealth. He lost family. He lost health. And all he was left with was his wife and a very small number of friends. But somehow, Job still had a faith and a hope that weathered it all. In fact, it was so astounding that it did not make sense to Job's wife or his friends. His wife basically comes to him in much firmer and much stronger terms than what I'm about to say, said basically this, give up on God and die. And his friends are there, and they're trying to help Job by trying to examine what must Job have done wrong. See, they were concerned with finding the cracks in Job's life, but they missed his foundation. Job's hope and security was not in himself, not in what he did or did not do, because in fact, Job had done nothing wrong. His hope, his security, his significance was in someone else. Now this morning, if we're willing to consider it, Jesus is offering us all an opportunity to consider the quality of what we treasure by looking at how it functions as the foundation we build our lives on. That's really important. I'm going to repeat that. Jesus is offering us all an opportunity to consider the quality of what we treasure by looking at how it functions as the foundation that we build our life on. And then he offers us the one true foundation, himself. Jesus always has been and always will be the only true foundation for our lives. See, Paul, when he writes his first letter to the Corinthian church, points this out. He says this in 1 Corinthians 3:11, "For no one can lay a foundation other than that which is laid, which is Christ, or Jesus Christ." For Paul, all of life, and especially our faith, must be built on Jesus. There is no other foundation. Similarly, King David, on the run in the wilderness, he's being chased and being sought out to be killed. He over and over again looks to the Lord as his rock. Psalm 18:2 says, "The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my rock in whom I take refuge, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold." This is the kind of life that Jesus is describing to us in this parable, and he's inviting us into it. But this leads us to a critical question, doesn't it? How does Jesus become the foundation of our life? It starts by examining what it is we treasure most. Has that subtly become the foundation of our life, even if it's a good thing? And if so, how can Jesus become our foundation? After all, why settle for good things when Jesus is truly the best? See, it starts by being willing to own our own false foundations. It means being willing to surrender the things that we treasure, that we love so much, that we cling to for meaning and security, and instead begin looking at the treasure that Jesus is. And here's what that means and what that looks like. It begins by looking to and getting to know the heart of Jesus. We do this by getting to know his character, the kind of love that he shows, a love that went so far as to die on the cross in our place, and that runs after us even when we're running away from him. And the only way to discover this, is to read the Bible, because it's God's revelation, his truth of who he is. And so we listen and watch for what he is like as we read. And we begin to understand his great affection towards us, his great love towards us. And in the process, we get to know him for who he is. And we begin to see just how good he really is. He loves us enough to meet us where we are. And even when we're utterly rejecting him, wanting to live a life of autonomy and independence from him, wanting to do life on our terms. And at the core of it, rejecting his love and his presence in our lives, and instead looking to ourselves out of a self-focused and self-centered love. But he doesn't leave us there. He wants us to be free from our deep-rooted selfishness, our sin, and help us to find our peace, our hope, and trust in him because he loves us. When we see his promises towards us, when we see how he pursues us and how in a relationship with him, he genuinely offers his very self to us, all he is, it changes us. And as we get to know him, we genuinely begin to treasure him and our relationship with him. He is the one we long to hang out with. We delight in being with him. We want to share every part of our life with him, just like he shares with us. And we want to share him with others because he is just that good. Or to put it another way, he is genuinely the best. He is our best. and the end result. When Jesus is our treasure, our lives are built on our relationship of mutual love and affection with him. Which means that when life gets to and even beyond the breaking point, our response to all that is going on in and around us looks a lot like David and like Job's responses. We have a radical faith and a radical trust in him. We trust in his goodness and love. We set our hopes and our prayers and our joys on him, regardless of how things turn out. Our prayers become conversations filled with trust and hope. And so when the river is rushing down on us, our eyes aren't focused on the river. They're focusing on Jesus. He is our hope. He is our foundation. And as others look at us, and they will, they see someone whose life is built on something that has survived the crushing weight of life, even when everything seems to have been stripped away. Others see someone whose life is built on the rock, on Jesus. Now, I want to close by coming back to the illustration we started with this morning. That friend or that son or daughter whose foundation in life just took a big hit. And they want to know, what do I do? What do I do? If you're a follower of Jesus, where would you like to bring them to? How might you be able to disciple them in that moment? What hope do you have to offer? When Jesus is our foundation, or when Jesus is your foundation, when your hope is set on him, you have the greatest hope anyone could ever ask for, even if life doesn't turn out the way you or they might want. Yet because of Jesus, it is not the end of the story. And for many of us who know and love Jesus, we can remember moments where Jesus showed himself to be a true and firm foundation. Let God use your story to offer that same hope to others. Jesus himself, to anyone who God has placed in your path. Now I'm going to invite the worship team to come on back up. And as they do, I invite you to ask the question, who or what is the foundation of your life? Ask Jesus to show you who or what you might be treasuring and building your life on. If it isn't on him, ask him to turn your desires back to him, to see and treasure his goodness and love, and most of all, himself. And if he is your foundation this morning, take this next song and pour out your heart to God in celebration, because he is so good. Remember who it is that we have set our hopes on, and thank him that because of who he is, we have a firm and unshakable foundation, even in the hardest times. Let's sing. Jesus is for you. He's with you. He wants to be with you. As we head out this week, remember that. Get to know him. Look into his word. Hear his heart towards you. He's for you. He wants to be with you. Let's pray before end. Let's pray as we close. Father, thank you. Thank you for how you love us. Thank you for how you pursue us. Thank you that you are the sure and true foundation. Father, turn our eyes towards you over and over and over again. Help us to delight in who you are. And see you for who you are. More and more of you, Father, and less of us, was to turn to you. Pray this in your name. Amen. As you head out this morning, I would encourage you, take a moment and get to know somebody else. Have a great day.